Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Non-Delegation Doctrine Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 9, 2015, the Supreme Court decided Department of Transportation v. Association of American Railroads. The question in this case is whether the Passenger Rail Investment and Improvement Act of 2008 unconstitutionally delegates legislative power to a putatively private entity, Amtrak, by involving it in the creation of standards used to determine whether freight railroads are according the preference to Amtrak's passenger trains that is required by federal law regarding the use of rail lines. In an opinion delivered by Justice Kennedy, the court held unanimously that for purposes of determining the validity of the metrics and standards issued by Amtrak, Amtrak is a governmental entity. Justice Kennedy's opinion for the court was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Scalia, Ginsburg, Breyer, Alito, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Alito also filed a concurring opinion. Justice Thomas filed an opinion concurring in the judgment. The judgment of the D.C. Circuit was vacated and remanded for further proceedings. To discuss the case, we have Professor Alexander Sasha Volokh, who is an Associate Professor of Law at the Emory University School of Law. Professor Volokh received his J.D. and Ph.D. in economics from Harvard University. He regularly teaches a course on law and economics of antitrust and has participated as an expert witness in cases involving antitrust or before the FTC. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Volokh.
Okay, so today I'm going to talk about the Amtrak case, whose full name is Department of Transportation versus Association of American Railroads. To understand this case, we have to understand a little bit about Amtrak and what it is and how it functions. It used to be that all these railroads had various common carrier responsibilities to carry passengers. They didn't really like this. In 1970, Congress created Amtrak. The full name of Amtrak is the National Railroad Passenger Corporation. So that was created by statute in 1970. And Amtrak is a very specific sort of, you know, you can call it an agency, you can call it a corporation. The statute itself says that it's not an agency, but nonetheless, its board is government appointees, and it fulfills various congressional purposes, and the government owns almost all of its stock, so that actually some years ago, it was held to be a state actor for constitutional purposes. There's a case called LeBron, which had to do with a First Amendment claim against Amtrak. The First Amendment only applies against state actors, and Amtrak said that it was not a state actor, but private. For example, the statute says that it has to act as though it were a profit-making corporation. Anyway, the Supreme Court disagreed and said that kind of labeling was not dispositive, but really because of its substantial control by government officials and other factors, it was really a state actor, and so it was subject to First Amendment requirements as well as due process, equal protection, and the whole bevy of constitutional rights. Anyway, so that's Amtrak, and Amtrak took over the passenger service responsibilities of a lot of railroads. Now, there was a little bit of a quid pro quo, which is that in exchange for not having to carry passengers anymore, the railroads have to give Amtrak trains the right of way, and sometimes when there's a lot of congestion, there are at least claims that the other railroads are not giving Amtrak trains the right of way, and that leads to Amtrak trains being not on time and so on. So, in a recent statute, Congress gave Amtrak a certain limited regulatory authority, and basically what Amtrak is allowed to do is, together with the Federal Railroad Administration, they're supposed to develop various metrics and standards to measure the performance and scheduling of passenger railroad services. So if Amtrak trains are, you know, very late for a long period of time, then they use these metrics to assess that, and they that can be the basis for fines on the private railroads. So that's a sort of regulatory power that Amtrak has in conjunction with the Federal Railroad Administration. Amtrak and the FRA actually have to agree, and if they don't agree, then it goes to binding arbitration, and that arbitrator maybe could also be a private person. So the Association of American Railroads challenged this in the D.C. Circuit, and the D.C. Circuit, a panel decision written by Judge Janice Rogers Brown, said that this was unconstitutional. But the reason that the panel said it was unconstitutional was because of the non-delegation doctrine, that here you had Congress delegating some regulatory power to Amtrak. Now Congress delegates regulatory power all the time to agencies. The standard non-delegation doctrine says that you can delegate power, but you can't delegate legislative power. And what is the difference between a delegation of various kinds of authority and the forbidden delegation of legislative power? The difference is that to be permissible, to not be a delegation of legislative power, Congress has to make the important decision. In other words, has to state an intelligible principle. That's the term of art in the doctrine. As long as Congress states an intelligible principle, then its delegation of authority is not a delegation of legislative power. Now, in practice, this is hugely loose, and Congress has been able to get away with delegating power to agencies based on extremely vague language like fair, reasonable, adequate, and so on. But nonetheless, the doctrine is there, and at least in principle, poses some constraint on congressional delegation of authority to agencies. Anyway, the D.C. Circuit said that this case was different because Amtrak was actually not public but private, and that there's a per se rule against delegating any authority, any regulatory authority, to private entities. Now, you can quarrel this on a number of grounds. One is you can say, well, wait a minute, Amtrak is a state actor for purposes of constitutional rights. Why would you say that it's private? And the D.C. Circuit had a reasoning saying that, well, we believe that even though it's a state actor for purposes of rights, it may still be private for purposes of these separation of powers provisions like the non-delegation doctrine. It basically said that since it is sufficiently insulated from government control, then it's not accountable, and since it has to maximize profit, that means that prevents it from being public interested, and those two things together mean that it should be treated for purposes of non-delegation doctrine as private. So, but one can certainly quarrel with that and say that maybe you should consider Amtrak to be governmental for all purposes. Now, there's a second ground on which you can quarrel with this, which is to say, what does it matter whether the whether Amtrak is public or private? Really, it's the same non-delegation doctrine for everybody, and there is no special per se rule against private delegations. That was the position that I took when I filed an amicus brief in this case in the Supreme Court. My view was that there's a 1939 case called Curran v. Wallace, which I think clearly says that the delegation to private entities is judged under the same standards as delegations to public entities. And the D.C. Circuit relied on a case called Carter v. Carter Cole, but I think that's properly read as a due process case and not as a non-delegation doctrine case. So the D.C. Circuit opinion was vulnerable on at least those two grounds, and in addition, there are all sorts of other grounds that were raised in the case that had nothing to do with the non-delegation doctrine. But at least the non-delegation analysis was vulnerable on the grounds that maybe they were wrong and Amtrak really is public, and also that whether it's public or private, maybe it should be the same non-delegation doctrine for both. Anyway, it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court handed down a 9-0 decision. The main opinion was joined by 8 justices. Justice Thomas filed an opinion concurring in the judgment. The other 8 signed on to Kennedy's opinion, and of those 8, Alito also filed a concurring opinion. So the main opinion, which was for 8 justices, resolved the case on one of those grounds that I mentioned, basically said that Amtrak is not a private entity. Amtrak is a governmental entity for purposes of the non-delegation doctrine. And the reasons that they gave were very similar to the reasons that were given in the LeBron case about why Amtrak was a state actor for purposes of constitutional rights. So the bottom line is that Amtrak is considered governmental for pretty much every purpose here, whether you're talking about the non-delegation doctrine or talking about rights. In my view, that was a sort of not very interesting and very Amtrak-specific ground to resolve the case on, and unfortunately, it still leaves open this question, which I think is very interesting. Is there any different non-delegation doctrine for public and private entities? I argue that there isn't, but the D.C. Circuit panel said that there was, and that part was never overruled. So in principle, that reasoning might show up again. Now, Justice Alito had a concurring opinion, and in that concurring opinion, he talked about some of the other issues that are still present in the case, because now the case is remanded back to the D.C. Circuit, and they're going to continue having some litigation. So some of the issues the railroads may yet win on, I find Justice Alito's analysis to be fairly compelling. For example, he says, there may be appointments clause problems with Amtrak itself, because even though the board of Amtrak is nominated by the president with Senate confirmation, but then the board gets to choose who the president is going to be of Amtrak. And the president is not nominated and confirmed in the proper way, and that's possibly invalid. In addition, what about this arbitrator? If Amtrak and the Federal Railroad Administration can't agree on the metrics and standards, then an arbitrator is appointed. And that arbitrator seems to be an officer of the United States and possibly a principal officer of the United States, but he is not appointed in the proper way. In addition, Alito brings back the whole private non-delegation doctrine idea, because he seems to agree with that and says that if the arbitrator is private, that's a delegation of power to a private entity, and delegations of power to private entities are per se unconstitutional, see Carter Cole. So that's actually very interesting. As the case is on remand in the D.C. Circuit, they may seek to resolve it on exactly the same theory, which is that now not Amtrak, but this time the arbitrator is the recipient of delegated power and is private, and that's per se unconstitutional. So that argument may yet be alive. Anyway, Alito's concurring opinion is just interesting because it just foreshadows some of the issues that have been in the case from the start and that now could be addressed by the D.C. Circuit on remand. Finally, Justice Thomas has an opinion concurring in the judgment. The last time the Supreme Court had a non-delegation doctrine case was about 15 years ago in Whitman v. American Trucking Associations. And there, that was fairly straightforward. They just used the intelligible principle doctrine to say that a delegation of power to the EPA was valid and not a delegation of legislative power because there was an intelligible principle. Everyone agreed with that, but Justice Thomas had his own separate opinion where he said, yes, this is a good application of current doctrine, but I'm concerned that our current doctrine has strayed too far from the text of the Constitution because the Constitution doesn't say anything about intelligible principles. Rather, it speaks about Congress having legislative power. Vesting clause of Article 1, that all legislative power is vested in the Congress. And he said at that point, I'm concerned that there might be some delegations which, even though they have an intelligible principle, they may still be forbidden delegations of legislative power. And he expressed his willingness to revisit this in an appropriate case. Well, it's been 15 years since an appropriate non-delegation doctrine case has come up, and so this was it. So he has a very lengthy concurrence in the judgment setting forth his whole originalist perspective on what a new non-delegation doctrine ought to look like. And his proposed non-delegation doctrine would be very radical, much more restrictive of what Congress can do than what we have now. He would say that only Congress can make general rules restricting private conduct. And so what that means is that the bulk of what is done by the regulatory state would have to be approved by Congress under his view. So that's a very interesting position. He probably isn't speaking for anyone but himself, but he really does lay out a complete vision of an alternative, more originalist non-delegation doctrine. So that's pretty much the Amtrak case. It resolves this specific issue on a not very interesting and Amtrak-specific ground, but a lot of the interesting stuff is in the separate opinions by Justice Alito and Justice Thomas.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.